Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Welcome to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirita with Mary Nemechek, and we are a site that we saw recently in the Scavi tour at our trip to Rome, which is absolutely fascinating to me. I mean, anybody who goes to Rome, of course, I have a lot of people asking me, what should I see when I go to Rome? And I always say, look, if at all possible, you really, really need to see the Scavi tour. And now those would be the excavations below the Basilica of St. Peter's that it unearthed a first century necropolis slash cemetery, as well as eventually what turned out to be the bones of St. Peter. Now, the bones of St. Peter don't have St. Peter inscribed on them, okay? It's not like there's a little name tag that says, these are the bones of Peter. But those are bones that eventually were tested and were found to be from the first century of an old elderly man that had been crucified upside down. This man was used to hard physical labor, and he just happened to be buried there. So, you know, when you put all of it together, it seems fairly logical that that would be who's in there. So, so the trophy of Gaius, as I said, is this little monument, not very tall, which marks the original spot, right? There must have been something over it to begin with, because we know that the body of Peter wouldn't have been out in the open air, but it definitely would have been, marked or preserved in some way. All right. So that is why, and we were recapping from last time, that is why originally Constantine came to this spot. He didn't go to another spot, right? Because everybody knew that that is where Peter was buried. People had been, by the time Constantine built the basilica, people had been coming to pray over Peter's tomb for 2.5 centuries.
So which is not unusual, because the Christians would always mark their places. I mean, when we were over in Israel, if you go back to scripture, what did they do? They marked these places. In the Old Testament, they would build an altar. When Jesus was living in the places he went, it was, people knew where they were, and it was always marked in some way, and people visited. And this is not unusual for this to be accurate, in other words, because this was part of their culture.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So marked, and people probably went to pray. We know that because there's very early inscriptions known as graffiti. So you know what a graffiti is. Usually there's spray painted in our day. But back then, in the absence of spray paint, I suppose they chiseled their prayer requests into this particular wall, which is a famous wall associated with burial of Peter, which reflects the fact that people were believed that they were praying to somebody who was buried beneath. Remember, I talked about last show, I talked about a doll house, basically, or a Russian doll, a box within a box within a box. So think about the remains of Peter being secured right after his death in a way that was memorable, that people would find. Already by the 100, by 150, there is a trophy. There's a little bitty, looks like a mini Greek temple over it, marking the place with walls painted that ochre, that deep red ochre that you find in Rome, still to this day. And then you have the fact that Constantine enclosed this trophy with a marble little building, right? So he enclosed both the graffiti wall and the original monument, little small tiny little monument, with a larger box. Again, I would call it, this one is more like, it's about 3 meters wide, 150 deep, and 3 meters high. So it's a lot bigger. 3 meters is what, about 9 feet, right? Right. So we're talking about, it's a larger deal. Then
the red wall and the structure, they did test it for dating, and it goes back to the second century. They can date it back to that point in time.
Right. Yeah. And it's right next to the trophy of Gaius, right? Which we have evidence of in the 150, which is the middle of the second century. So we have, after the box that Constantine enclosed it in, Pope Pelagius or Gregory the Great, so either Gregory the Great or his predecessor, encased it into another box of marble. And then again, another Pope, Pope Calixtus, in 1123 came by and enclosed it yet again. And every time they enclose it, it's with embellishments and marble and frescoes and gold, etc. And then you have the present-day papal altar, which was consecrated in 1594, which is as well, and it's clearly visible when you go visit St. Peter. So that's actually kind of cool. But going back to the Constantinia Basilica, I think last time we mentioned that Constantine actually leveled the Vatican Hill so that it was no longer a hill, so a considerable amount of earthworks and building and construction, and he leveled the field. And what he did was basically pile a bunch of rubble over the original necropolis. And the effect of piling all this dirt over the existing necropolis / cemetery was to basically encase them for all time and preserve them for all time, to their frescoes, to their niches of bones, and to everything else, to their inscriptions, etc. They were like frozen in time because of Constantine's efforts to preserve the tomb of Peter and to build a strong foundation over which to build the original basilica, which was built in wood.
And you can see where that original foundation was. There's an opening where you can see one place where it's visible.
Mm-hmm. And well, as you come down, as you go into the Scavi office and you take your little trip down to the first century, you can see the exposed foundations, and they will point out to you, this is the original one, this is the Constantinian fill, and these are the foundations of the present basilica. Right. And it's basically rubble on top of rubble on top of rubble on top of rubble, right? All pressed down.
If people do want to go and take it, you need to get tickets in advance. This is not something that you just walk up and you can do.
4 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And it's actually, even, I know people even 4 to 6 months who are denied. So it's a quite a complicated thing. You need to go to Vatican.va and then go to the Scavi tour office and request them. And they have to be requested in a certain way. It's quite complicated. It's a typical bureaucratic sort of deal right there. But I can see, I mean, the place is not very big, and they already have hordes of tourists going through the Vatican Museums, the Sistine Chapel. I mean, visiting the Sistine Chapel in July is almost like going to purgatory, I would imagine, because it's hot, it's crowded, you can't move, you can't see anything. And I'm sure they don't want that to happen down in the delicate environment of the Scavi tour, also because the whole place is temperature controlled. If you remember, there's like special humidity controls, et cetera, because they want this stuff has been around for 2,000 years. So they want to make sure that it won't disintegrate by being exposed to too much carbon monoxide, et cetera. So that's, I think, probably why they make it so hard to get tickets
Right.
Although it's kind of frustrating. Also, you need to keep in mind is that, you know, there's people from all over the world coming to the SCAVI tour. So you have French-speaking groups and Italian-speaking groups and German-speaking groups and English and Chinese and Japanese and Korean, Swahili. And, you know, there's all kinds of groups going down there at, you know, five-minute intervals sort of thing, you know, all day long. So it must be quite something to organize to make sure. It used to be a lot when we first started coming, when I first started coming down to the SCAVI tour at the beginning of the 2000s, that I would just, whenever I was in Rome, I would just present myself at the SCAVI office and I would take whatever slot was available, if there had been a cancellation, you know, in whatever language, just to be down there and just to visit.
Is that the year that they started around 2000, the tours?
They started fairly recently. I remember when I first took a group in 2004,
that okay,
it was a fairly reasonably, it had almost, you know, it hadn't been around that long.
Okay.
We can look up to see whenever they decided to do it. But it was pretty cool because it took a long time. Now, how did they found it? They always knew that the bones of Peter were below. They always knew that there was good stuff below the Basilica of St. Peter's. There was always something out there to the point, but they never really got around to doing anything about it. And to excavating the further complex beyond what they knew to be the bones of Peter. Because, as you know, there's a succession of popes who, we just said, enclosed that particular little building with the bones of Peter in it. So everybody always knew where the bones were. But I guess over time they lost the belief that those might actually be the bones of Peter. And Constantine built his basilica right over the original trophy of Gaius and the original bones, the burial place of Peter that had been enclosed in many boxes, right?
Right.
When Constantine, and he built a basilica in wood, and the darn basilica was still around at the beginning of the 1500s, although it was rickety, it was on its last legs, and I think it was actually demolished somewhere around there to make place for, quote, the new basilica, which is the one that we know, right? That
right.
was finally inaugurated in the Baroque period in the 1600s with the contributions of Bernini and all that stuff, right? Michelangelo. The one that the incredible masterpiece that we see today, mm-hmm. right? But remember, the masterpieces we see today is the new church, right? It's the new church that was built over the old church that was built over the bones of Peter. I think that's probably a good way to think about it, okay? So the reason I recommend the story of the book, The Fisherman's Tomb, is because it kind of reads like a detective novel. Because even though people knew that there was stuff below the Basilica of St. Peter, people are like, well, big deal. There's stuff below most of Rome. You know, most of Rome, you do make any kind of foundation, any kind of building, and there you will hit, you know, two millennia worth of material, right? Depending
right.
on how far down you go. There's actually a whole neighborhood in Rome called Testaccio, which is kind of on the outskirts. It's not a very good neighborhood, actually, which is named after the testi, which is pieces of ceramic that kept coming to from the first through third through fourth through fifth centuries, which kept coming to light as they were building that neighborhood. Right. Huh? So, I mean, it's kind of like a common occurrence. You can take a bus to Piazza Venezia, which is like the big square that has the monument that's called the typewriter. We call it the wedding cake. It's like the monument to Victor Emmanuel, which was
right.
built at the end of the 1800s. It's like mm-hmm. a big, huge monstrosity, right? But
it
right
is.
Off of that, there is a piazza called Piazza Argentina, and it's where like there's a bus depot and you catch a bus, so you change buses or whatever. And that whole square is excavated down to its first century, to the ruins that were present in the first century. So you're doing your business, you're around this piazza, and then all the whole square center of the piazza has been dug down 30 feet, 40 feet down to the first century level. So you have columns and you have ruins and you have buildings and you have fascinating stuff right there as you're catching the bus, right? Complete with cats. I was just there in February And my daughter and I had a great time feeding the cats in Piazza Argentina, who would emerge from the ruins that were in the middle of the piazzas. That to say that, of course, Rome is what it is, right? I mean, it's truly probably one of the most artifact-rich places in the world. So, of course, they always knew that there was this stuff below, but they never really got around to, or maybe had the technology or the science to do it. It wasn't until 1935, 36, 38 that Pius XII, when he took over after Pius XI, decided that he was going to take a look down there. And they did some restricting digging, but then they realized that they had hit the jackpot when they started coming up with this incredible necropolis. So they stopped. And they actually hid the excavations all throughout the Second World War because they were afraid that if the Germans found out that they were excavating things of incredible value below the St. Peter's, they would come in and take over because they had a history of doing what? Stealing artifacts from various places, right? So all throughout the Second World War, it was very hush-hush. Nobody knew what, you know, that they had begun the excavations and that then they suspended it. After the war, in the late 40s, they resumed the excavations, but in what I think they thought at the time was a very organized way, but that turned out to be a way that was kind of plagued by incompetence and by clericalism. Like, they put a priest in charge who didn't know what he was doing, but he had to be in charge because a priest had to be in charge, you know, that kind of thing. And it wasn't until the unsung hero of the place, of the piece, Dr. Margherita Guarducci, who was an archaeologist, a very devoted, dedicated archaeologist, who kept insisting on, and she was, I think, a graffiti expert, and she finally, they dug down to the first century wall, the second century wall of the graffiti, and finally figured out that the wall abutting it was actually the wall that contained the space where the bones of Peter would be buried. I really recommend that book if you can, because it was it's kind of very cloak and dagger. Finally, she managed to, I think she was actually then put in charge, or at least one of the people in charge of the excavation, and they dug down and they were able to find these bones. When the technology had taken, had caught up in the 70s, I think, I do remember because I think I was living in Rome at the time. In the 70s, the bone, parts of the bones that were excavated were found to be of, like I said before, an older man of Semitic extraction who had been accustomed to heavy physical labor, who had been crucified upside down and was buried. It just happened to be buried in this place of honor behind many boxes of marble and decorations and behind a graffiti wall that said, "Peter is within." You know, mm-hmm. I mean, how many signs do you want? You know, how much evidence do you want? You know, I mean, I suppose it'd be nice for a headstone to say, "Hey, Peter of Bethsaida is buried here," but that's not how the ancients used to do stuff, you know? So that's the history of the bones, and that's why Constantine ended up putting his church over that particular spot and no other spots, and also why Constantine put his basilica devoted to the Apostle Paul in the place far outside Rome, where it still resides, although it's been rebuilt because it was destroyed by a fire in the 1800s. And even in the basilica built to honor the Apostle Paul by Constantine, they found bones below the central altar of the Basilica of St. Paul, and lo and behold, whose bones are in there? The bones of the Apostle Paul. So I love it when things that are lost in history get found again, and what we know to be true gets proven to be true.
Well, you know, in the current basilica, when you're talking about Peter's bones, when you look at the main altar, you have to think of below that altar. That is where they are. Now, you know, how extraordinary is that? I mean, the precise location seems to be exactly where it should be, below the altar. It almost gives you goosebumps when you go through this tour and you see these different layers and how it all lines up.
Absolutely. And there's actually a little chapel called La Cappella Clementina, the Clementine Chapel, which you actually exit out of when you exit the tour, in this beautiful little gem of a chapel with, I don't know, four pews in it, right? And
right.
It's beautifully decorated, and it's actually called the altar is called Ad Caput Sancti Petri, which means at the head of Saint Peter. And that is also one of, that helps you to orient where the tomb of Peter is as well. So anyway,
you always finish the tour when you're at the spot with prayer, mm-hmm. which is very nice. And depending on your guide, sometimes the guide will lead a prayer, but other times, you know, the people just spontaneously will kneel down and pray because you're right there with Peter. It's bones. I mean, it's just extraordinary.
I know it is pretty amazing. We were there. Let's see. This last time, I've had some so-so experiences there with guides. You know, especially if you have some sort of secular-minded Italian guide who's kind of post-Christian, and this is a job for them, and they're showing it to you, but they're obviously not. There's no belief behind all that, and that was kind of disappointing. Actually, I was on one tour where we actually skipped the bones because
I was too.
Time constraints. That was just awful. I've been on some wonderful tours given by, it used to be the seminarians at the North American College were allowed to give tours, and those were just wonderfully, also uniformly wonderful. Those young men would give you the missing piece that a lot of the guys would not give you, which is the devotion and the spiritual part of it, right? This last time, I must say, we had a wonderful Italian lady who knew her stuff, who was very sensitive to our request to pray, and we had a priest with us, and he was able to pray, and it was a fabulous moment. It was really quite touching. So that's just a little taste of what you can expect if you decide to go to Rome and you have the time to request the tickets at the Scavi office. Remember, Vatican.va, and then ask for Scavi office, S-C-A-V-I. And request the tickets, because it's going to take you 4 to 6 months, but it's going to be worth every single minute that you spent fooling, trying to get the tickets. You will just absolutely be bowled over by the significance of this spot. So we thank you for joining us.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.